there. Today is Tuesday, December 27th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, Japan's Prime Minister is meeting with President Obama in Hawaii.
I think it's significant in the fact that it sends a symbolic message to not only the incoming president-elect, but also to the region.
Taking a look back at the rise of Donald Trump, the world's most precious species are increasingly at risk. Also ahead, I'm never gonna dance again. Guilty feet have got glory. Remembering pop star George Michael. It's all on today's International Edition. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe is in Pearl Harbor, Hawaii for talks with President Obama, the first Japanese leader to visit the iconic U.S. naval base in 65 years. Japanese officials say Abe's meeting with the president Tuesday is aimed at expressing the value of reconciliation between Japan and the United States. VOA's Victor Beatty asks Jeffrey Hornung, a research fellow with Sasakawa Peace Foundation, a D.C.-based U.S.-Japan think tank, for his take on the significance of Abe's visit.
I think it's significant in the fact that it sends a symbolic message to not only the incoming president-elect, but also to the region, that the U.S.-Japan alliance is stronger than ever, that we are able to confront past issues, problems between us, and still be stronger as allies.
Is China, do you think, watching this closely?
I hope so. I hope that both China and other countries that may have some ill feelings towards Japan look at this and see that even though Japan has done some horrible things when in its imperial past, that it is able to confront these past ghosts and overcome it. But I also hope that China in particular and North Korea see this, that the U.S.-Japan alliance, no matter what friction the recent presidential election here in the United States has caused, that the allies are stronger than ever and are able to look forward and hopefully look at challenges in the same way.
Well, young people in both Japan and the U.S. barely even know what Pearl Harbor stands for, but this obviously is a trip with historical significance.
It is a trip with historical significance. When it first broke, news was that he would be the first prime minister to ever visit Pearl Harbor. But in fact, in the recent weeks, we've learned that he will be the fourth prime minister. However, he will be the first prime minister to visit the Arizona. And of course, the generations that pass, a lot of the younger generation don't know the significance of Pearl Harbor. But given that these two countries were bitter rivals and enemies within two or three generations ago, it's amazing that they have been able to come this far and reconcile their past histories.
Well, of course, Mr. Abe will be speaking with outgoing President Barack Obama, but I want to speak about incoming President-elect Donald Trump, who has been critical of the U.S. military presence in Japan, as well as pledging to pull out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Pact. How concerning is this to Japanese leaders?
Well, for Japanese leaders, first the TPP. The failure of the TPP, even under the Obama administration, has been concerning because Prime Minister Abe put a lot of political capital into this. He had to confront some agricultural cooperatives within his own country and really confront opposition with his own party with this to be able to push it through his country. And so it is disconcerting to Prime Minister Abe that it appears to be all but dead on the United States side. But in regards to security issues, as you stated, there's been some talk during the campaign about belittling Japan's importance for security, talking about the cost of U.S. troops in Japan in a very mischaracterized, actually. And all this was taken very negatively in Japan because the narrative for really the last couple of years is that the U.S.-Japan alliance is the strongest it's ever been. And to have an incoming president come in and say these things about Japan has really got a lot of people scratching their heads and a little worried that he might not see the U.S.-Japan alliance in the same way that all previous U.S. presidents have.
Mr. Abe's trip comes as a carrier-based Chinese battle force is moving into the Western Pacific for the first time in what are being called routine exercises, but China's indicated this is the beginning of a blue water fleet that hopes to visit the eastern Pacific and not to kowtow to U.S. Security concerns. How important is this?
Well, I think this is exactly why the incoming Trump administration needs to look at Asia with the same importance that the outgoing Obama administration does, and the same reason why President-elect Trump needs to look at Prime Minister Abe with the same importance that President Obama does, because you have a rising China. You have a China that is very willing to use force and not be that concerned about public opinion. We see what it's done with the South China Sea and various activities. And this the movement by the aircraft carrier and the pledge of starting sort of a presence now farther out into the Pacific, this is worrying because this could mark sort of a inflection point where China has really pushed out and doing new activities. And so the U.S. administration really needs to keep Japan at the top of its priority list in terms of allies and with force multiplying and platform for power projection in the Asia-Pacific region.
Well, Japanese warplanes attacked the U.S. Pacific Fleet at Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941, killing more than 2,400 servicemen and thrusting the United States into World War II. Abe is not expected to apologize for the attack on Pearl Harbor. President Obama offered no apology for the U.S. dropping two atomic bombs on Japan in 1945 when he visited Hiroshima in May. The White House has said Abe's visit highlights the alliance between the former wartime enemies. President Obama, meanwhile, who is vacationing in Hawaii, visited American troops at a military base on Christmas Day for the last time during his presidency, weeks before President-elect Donald Trump's scheduled inauguration.
It has been the privilege of my life to serve as your commander-in-chief. I know Michelle feels the same way when it comes to being able to stand alongside our military families and our veterans.
On Saturday, he called troops deployed overseas, telling them Americans back at home understood they were fighting for freedom. He told the troops that even after leaving office in January, he will continue visiting the base for many years to come. And speaking of American veterans, during this holiday season, there is some good news for those servicemen and women who've proudly served their country. Joining me now for details on what the good news is Dr. Cindy Cook, president of the Association of American Nurse Practitioners.
The Veterans Administration put forward a rule to allow advanced practice registered nurses, including nurse practitioners, what we call full practice authority, across the Veterans Administration healthcare system. And what this would do would to help modernize the VA system and allow the 4,800 nurse practitioners that already work in the VA to practice to the full scope of their education and clinical training. What that would do would be increase access to care or increase the number of appointments for our veterans who are, we know, are waiting for appointments.
How much need has there been up until this point that wasn't being met?
Well, according to last month's statistics from the VA, over 500,000 veterans were waiting 30 days or longer for treatment at VA healthcare facilities. Almost 300,000 are waiting up to 60 days for care. So it's significant.
How did this come about?
Well, the Veterans Administration has been working very diligently over the last few years to put this rule together. And what they did was they put it in the Federal Register in May, and it was open for comments for 60 days, which closed on July the 25th.
How quickly will these veterans now be able to actually get the help they need?
I would hope very quickly, as the need has definitely been there. And I would hope that the implementation period would be as quick as possible. It is significant to make sure that these people get the care that they really need.
These are people that have served our country so bravely, and it's we've been hearing for, you know, a long time now that they've sort of been shortchanged. They haven't really been always getting the kind of care that they need and deserve. What are some of the greatest needs?
The first need to me is access to care, because when they get into the facility, it's my understanding and my, you know, my experience that they really get excellent care once they get into the system and once they have their appointments, that the providers there, both, you know, the physicians, the nurse practitioners, the physician assistants, are all excellent providers. And so it's a matter of access.
That's Dr. Cindy Cook, president of the Association of American Nurse Practitioners. Thanks for being with us. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. Russia mounts a massive search for victims of a crashed plane. 40 people shot in Chicago over the holiday weekend. 9 people are dead in Uganda after a boat capsizes on Lake Albert. Peace activists set out for Syria from Berlin on foot. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. When Time magazine chose President-elect Donald Trump as its Person of the Year for 2016, it came as no surprise after an election campaign that at times transfixed Americans and millions of others around the world. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone looks back at one of the major stories of the year and some of Trump's challenges as the incoming 45th United States president.
Donald Trump's journey to the White House began in June of 2015 with a campaign announcement befitting his reputation as a master showman and with a simple message that excited his supporters.
I am officially running for President of the United States, and we are going to make our country great again.
Wow. Trump was controversial from the start, promising a crackdown on illegal immigration and initially proposing a ban on Muslims wanting to come to the United States. Underestimated by his Republican rivals, Trump built his brand as a political outsider and swept through an experienced primary field that included feisty debate clashes like this one with former Florida Governor Jeb Bush.
This is a tough business to run for president.
Oh, I know. You're a tough guy, Jeb.
And we need to have a leader that is principled. You're never going to be president of the United States by insulting your way to the presidency.
Well, let's see. I'm at 42 and you're at 3, so far I'm doing better.
Doesn't matter.
In the race for the Democratic Party nomination, Hillary Clinton prevailed after a much tougher than expected primary challenge from Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. Once she secured the nomination, Clinton sought to cast Trump as unfit to be president.
A man you can bait with a tweet is not a man we can trust with nuclear weapons.
But on election night, Trump stunned the world with a victory few had predicted over the heavily favored Clinton. In his victory speech, Trump sounded a conciliatory tone after a divisive campaign.
To all Republicans and Democrats and independents across this nation, I say it is time for us to come together as one united people.
Clinton also urged her supporters to respect the outcome.
Donald Trump is going to be our president. We owe him an open mind and the chance to lead.
One of the keys to Trump's victory was a desire for change, says analyst Tom DeFrank.
I think we all, including the media, but everybody, misunderestimated, as George W. Bush might say, the profound desire for change. And in the end, Trump, with all his imperfections, with all his blemishes, was the only perceived agent of change.
Trump will take office with the advantage of Republican control of Congress, says John Fortier.
And I think that allows him to have an agenda that goes forward on domestic policy and legislation, where a Hillary Clinton would have had a harder time with divided government doing those things.
Trump must now balance a desire to deliver on promises to his core supporters while at the same time trying to bring the country together after one of the most divisive elections in U.S. history. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Well, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu Sunday summoned the U.S. ambassador to discuss the U.S.'s abstention approval Friday of a U.N. Security Council resolution demanding an end to Israeli settlement activity in the occupied territories of the West Bank. At his weekly cabinet meeting, Mr. Netanyahu said the Obama administration, quote, initiated it, stood behind it, coordinated the wording, and demanded it be passed.
Over decades, American administrations and Israeli governments have disagreed about settlements. But we agreed that the Security Council was not the place to resolve this issue.
A reference to the incoming administration of President-elect Donald Trump. Donald Trump, Netanyahu also pressed Egypt to drop the resolution. A White House spokesman said, noting the increase in settlement activity, that the U.S. decision was consistent with the administration's opposition to settlement activity as a threat to an Israeli-Palestinian two-state solution. History professor Michael Fishbach of Randolph-Macon College in Virginia calls it a remarkable development in Israeli-American relations.
The mere act of abstaining itself is remarkable. The Israeli reaction, while predictable, is in some ways remarkable. And the fact that all this is coming in the waning days of an American presidential administration is even more remarkable.
Fishbach said Israeli critics of Mr. Netanyahu, who wish for an end to the occupation and the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, may feel vindicated that an angry reaction to the resolution represents a personal and diplomatic defeat for the Israeli leader. He also believes it could lead to a set of international parameters for a peace settlement at a Mideast conference scheduled in Paris January 15th that could lead to another Security Council vote. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Jazz America!
This is Russ Davis, the host for Jazz America, where each week we give you the best of jazz past and present and conversation with the music makers. You can hear the program online at voanews.com and on the air on VOA each Saturday and Sunday at 13 hours Universal Time. Join me for Jazz America and help me celebrate the greatness of a century of jazz. Listen at 13 hours Universal Time, Saturdays and Sundays on VOANews.com and the Voice of America.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the 2016 year in review. We'll take a look at some of the continent's major events and happenings. We'll discuss Africa's political landscape and some of the challenges its leaders faced in 2016. That's right here on the next Straight Talk Africa at 1830 UTC.
This is VOA's International Edition.
Silver screen and all its sad goodbye. I'm never gonna dance again.
Well, that beautiful song, one of the many hits of George Michael, the British pop superstar who died Sunday of an apparent heart attack at the age of 53. The shock of one of the most respected and beloved entertainers is apparent by the celebrity tributes that continue to pour in. Elton John wrote on Instagram, "I have lost a beloved friend, the kindest, most generous soul, and a brilliant artist." And fans have been leaving flowers and tributes at Michael's home in England.
When we heard kind of the news this morning, we thought we would just come and pay our respects. I've definitely been a fan since I was young, so he was a big part of my youth, and growing up.
Well, the loss of Michael continues a year of grief in the music industry, with David Bowie, Prince, and Glenn Frey among those dying before the age of 70. And turning now to what's been trending, we are joined by Michael Lippin. Michael's death has been a real shock, and there's a lot of talk about it on social media.
Yeah, surprising to lots of people. And for the second straight day, many of his fans are remembering him on social media. We also heard from his male partner of the last few years, London-based hairstylist Fadi Fawaz. He tweeted this today: "It's a Christmas I will never forget. Finding your partner dead, peacefully in bed, first thing in the morning. I will never stop missing you." Many news sites also have been tweeting about George Michael's former partner, Kenny Goss, who had been in a relationship with the pop star for more than 10 years until they split in 2011. Goss told People magazine in a statement, "I'm heartbroken. He was a major part of my life, and I loved him very, very much."
That is just heartbreaking. What else are we learning about George Michael on social media?
Well, we're starting to get a picture of just how charitable he was. Some news sites are tweeting links to reports about British charities revealing that Michael had secretly been donating his time and money to causes that he cherished, such as those providing support to children, cancer victims, and even AIDS sufferers. In one particularly striking example, British TV presenter and producer Richard Osman, who's produced a British TV game show called Deal or No Deal, tweeted this note today: "A woman on Deal or No Deal told us that she needed £15,000, or about $18,000, for IVF or in vitro fertilization treatment, and that's a process aimed at helping a woman to become pregnant. Osman went on to say, George Michael secretly phoned the next day and gave her the £15,000.
Wow. What else is trending? Something maybe in the entertainment world, I hear?
Yeah, this is a little more upbeat. It's about the new Star Wars movie Rogue One. It's a top Facebook trend today with the news that it beat several new releases to get the biggest, the biggest money earner at the U.S. box office over the Christmas weekend. It added $96 million over the four-day period, according to studio estimates released on Monday. And I actually watched it the weekend before when it was also top of the box office, and absolutely loved it. It starts a little slow, but it really picks up toward the end with some amazing battle scenes, so I recommend.
All right. Thanks so much, Michael. You can follow him on Twitter at Michael_Lippin and myself at Lori London. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. So, as you just heard, Rogue One, the new Star Wars movie, showed once again it's a force to be reckoned with at the box office, blasting past a group of new releases to hold on to the top spot over the long holiday weekend. But joining me now to talk about the number two and number three most popular movies to hit U.S. theaters is Vegas film critic Jeffrey K. Howard. Hi, Jeff. Let's start with Passengers.
Well, Passengers is a really cool thriller. It takes place in the future with Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence, who are passengers on this giant spaceship that's heading off to colonize a world that's 150 years away. So they're in this chamber. They're sleeping. You know, of course, you can't be awake that long, but something malfunctions on the ship, and Chris Pratt wakes up and Jennifer Lawrence wakes up. So now picture yourself on a giant ship that's like everything you could ever imagine: recreation, food, hotel rooms that are like suites. I mean, everything you need, but you're all alone, right? So because there's parts of the ship they can't access, like the crew. They can't send a message because it would take 50 years. So they're sitting on this giant mall of a ship that has over 5,000 passengers, and they're trying to figure out what to do. So the movie not only is an interesting human nature study. It's like how you need companionship, how you need some sort of challenge in your life. But the movie is really also a love story. Of course, if they're the only two on the ship that's awake, love is going to blossom. But of course, it falls into that stereotype of sci-fi films in the third act where something goes wrong with the ship and they have to fix it, and or something's going to blow up. So overall, the movie did have a lot of problems. They were reshooting stuff in October, and you know, there was kind of mixed buzz on this. But overall, if you're a sci-fi fan like I am, this is like science fiction that's kind of real. You know, it's not like a fantasy science fiction like Star Wars or something. So everything's kind of realistic in it, and that's what really appealed to me. Plus, seeing these two as a character study on human interaction on this ship, you know, heading to this new planet. So if you're a big sci-fi fan, I think you might enjoy it. If you don't like science fiction, I think you might be confused.
Okay, well, that's good to know for sure. And we do have another option: sing.
Well, something for the family, of course.
Should we,
you know,
sing?
We gotta
to
have
this?
Some. You can sing to it. It's all, you know. This is from the Illumination Studios, who gave us, you know, the Minions and Despicable Me. So this is about a koala bear, voiced by Matthew McConaughey, who's got one of those old time vaudeville theaters that's falling apart. Well, he's out of money.
Oh, well, he's my boyfriend, so it'll work out really well.
It will. He needs to save his theater because he's broke. He has to save this legacy that his father started. So he has a great idea. He's going to do a singing competition and they have a big grand prize. So you've got elephants. You've got porcupines that do punk rock music. You've got little mice that sing Sinatra songs. You've got all these contestants that are competing for this prize with some of the biggest stars in Hollywood. We have Reese Witherspoon and you have Seth MacFarlane singing, doing his Sinatra crooning. And it's just, it's a good time. It really is. It's like Noah's Ark auditioning for American Idol or The Voice. So kids are going to eat it up. I was kind of like, you know, it went on a little too long, you know, 2 hours of singing animals. But, you know, I think it's more for the little kids than it is for the adults, unlike a Zootopia or something like that. But I think it's going to be a big hit. It's great escapism. It's great for the holidays. And Matthew McConaughey is just hysterical as this koala bear who's running this theater.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks so much, Jeff. You can find his full video reviews at VegasFilmCritic.com.
I'm James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa. Join me every weekday mornings at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of the show through our listeners' mail segment. Just send your views to daybreakafrica@voanews.com or call us on 202-205-9942. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
You've been listening to International Edition. Thank you so much for tuning in, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Charles Hall. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Throughout this holiday season, the United States government is profiling the cases of prisoners unjustly held around the world and the families they leave behind. The stories of these individuals, said U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Samantha Power, highlight the broader struggle faced by so many families of political prisoners who have to commemorate countless family occasions with loved ones behind bars. One of those unjustly imprisoned is Ilham Toti, a member of the Muslim Uyghur ethnic group in China. Before his arrest, Ilham Toti was a distinguished professor of economics at Beijing's Minzu University. Toti was also a voice of reason on Uyghur issues, encouraging both the Chinese government and the Uyghur community to constructively engage in order to improve relations. Beginning in 2006, Toti ran a website to foster discussion about the economic, social, and developmental issues Uyghurs face. His site also improved cross-cultural understanding between ethnic groups by translating Chinese language news into Uyghur. In January 2014, Toti was arrested with 7 of his students and accused by Chinese authorities of forming a criminal gang that sought to split Xinjiang from China. In September 2014, after a 2-day trial, Toti was given a life sentence on charges of separatism. Toti's sentence is one of the harshest handed down to a rights activist in recent years and comes amid a sweeping crackdown on dissent under Chinese President Xi Jinping. Several of the students arrested with Toti were given lesser sentences after their televised public confessions. Toti was tried and imprisoned in Xinjiang, more than 2,000 kilometers from Beijing, where his family still lives, making it difficult and expensive for them to see him in brief bi-monthly visits. Mr. Toti and his family represent thousands of other prisoners unjustly detained around the world and their family members who also suffer as a result. The United States, said Ambassador Power, calls on all governments to release them. Political prisoners should be free to believe. They should be free to be loved. They should be free to be home.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
is 4.